Welcome back to the Mutic and Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is J.R. Peters.
What's up?
We are recording this in July, so, it's time to catch up on the year as it's been going so far and talk about some things that we've liked. I'm going to talk about several movies, and J.R. is going to talk about several TV shows. First thing to ask, J.R., Barbie or Oppenheimer? Because it feels like this is the cultural moment of the year.
So weekend Oppenheimer first. My week that week is a pretty good week actually. Wednesday is my birthday. Thursday I'm going, instead of going to see Oppenheimer, we're going to see Snoop Dogg and Wiz Khalifa.
Okay.
Followed by Friday for Oppenheimer. Saturday is a mimosa and margarita festival, and then Barbie. So we're gonna just get trashed and go to Barbie, which seems like it's gonna be perfect.
That's a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, I'm like, that's a solid 4 days, right?
There's a wide range in those three things. You're really getting vastly different experiences with each one.
I'm getting it all, and that's what I'm all in. I'm all in for. That's why we're here, right? Is to experience life. And I think Tuesday, the day before my birthday, I'm going to a country dive bar here in Indy and doing a two-step day, like a two-step night with some I do pottery with. So it's like I'm just living the wildest life I could right now.
Yeah, you've completed your bingo card.
Yeah. So I'm definitely in on both of them. If I had to pick one and I couldn't go see the other, it's going to obviously be Oppenheimer because, as we've talked about before on the podcast, I am at one of the like 30 theaters in the world or whatever that will play actual 70 millimeter 15 perf film. So like, I got to do that when it comes around.
The 11 mile reel.
Yep.
The picture of that's been making the rounds, like
600 pounds, 11 miles. Yeah,
it's in your neighborhood.
Yeah, it's available to me, and it's available 2 miles from where I'm at, walking distance basically. So I got to do it when it comes up, but I'm doing both of them because they both look great. Like Barbie, I think Barbie's gonna be great, just in a completely different version of greatness that Oppenheimer is, obviously.
It's a toss-up for me. I'm going to see Barbie first, probably, just because there is another IMAX, a proper IMAX theater near me, but it's like 45 minutes, so I'm going to save that for a little later in the week. Greta Gerwig is she's directed three movies. I haven't seen the first like little tiny one whose name I don't even know, from like 2008 or 9. I haven't seen that. Couldn't even name it. But Lady Bird and Little Women they were both the best movies of their respective years. I should be more excited about Barbie. Barbie's probably... It's hard to imagine Barbie being bad. Or even just mediocre. I feel like it's possible, though. Like, it might not work on me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's going to be one of those things that if I don't like it, I'm not going to walk out and say, this is not a good movie. I'm going to watch it and be like, that wasn't for me.
Yeah.
You know,
I would generally agree with that. Like she's not going to make a bad movie. Everything I've seen from like the trailers and the little bits of promotional material I've got, I'm optimistic. Oppenheimer seems like a can't miss movie. When the trailers for it played before Creed 3 earlier in the year, people applauded, and it was an Atlanta crowd. So they were right to applaud. It was a great trailer, but for them to applaud struck me as very interesting and not what I was expecting at all.
I've never seen that before. The closest I've got to that is when we're at the IMAX theater, which I go to as much as I can for any giant movie, any movie where they're like, this is IMAX format, quote unquote. So even fucking Marvel movies, which I don't know how many more I'll be going to in theater, which
sure.
closer to zero than to five. But I would go there for that because they were, you did get more bang for your buck because they do have IMAX versions of those movies. And so we went to see something in like 2020. And the trailer for Top Gun Maverick came on. Mm-hmm. And everyone's talking, and then, boom, Top Gun Maverick trailer comes on, and the screen just expands to show, like, almost the full fucking, you know, IMAX, 70 millimeter IMAX screen, and everyone just stopped talking at me, like, holy fuck, what is this? Holy shit, what do we got going on here? And, you know, we were all just, like, in awe that they were, like, oh, we got a new movie coming out that's full 70 millimeter that's not, you know, a Nolan film.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up being Top Gun Maverick.
Sure, which, yeah. Like, and then 2 years later.
Know, yeah, 2 years later, which, like, to be fair, they were right in saving that for a theater release, because I did see it at that IMAX theater, and that was fucking awesome. That was amazing. I'm glad I didn't see it anywhere else. It's, you know, maybe the problem with, we're talking about best of 2023. I'm going with one of the things I didn't like, and it may have been because I saw it in my house, which was Avatar The Last Airbender, or Avatar Way of Water. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Avatar Way of Water. It was like, I was watching it at home. It looked amazing, but I just felt a little bit more bored. But maybe, you know, that might just be a movie that first time you see it, you need to be in a theater where you can watch it. But, you know, I'm glad I waited for Top Gun Maverick. So there's no way I'm missing Oppenheimer there.
It very much feels like the biggest thing to happen in the culture since maybe Top Gun Maverick. And that I feel like came as more of a surprise.
Top Gun Maverick?
How good it did. The comparison might be like Avengers Endgame. Like corresponding with the end of Game of Thrones, that might be a better comp.
Yes, I would agree with that. Battle of Bastards and Avengers Endgame were the same weekend drop.
Yes, yeah.
Which
yeah.
also was the same weekend as the thing I think is, I've already talked about this before, but I think was the best of the three that came out that weekend. The episode of Barry where he fights the ninja dude and his ninja daughter, his karate daughter.
Yeah, that sounds fine. It was a long night episode to be a Game of Thrones pedantic person. Not Battle of the Bastards. Battle of the Bastards was better. Long night. I mean that whole whatever. We've litigated that to death. Very exciting. But as far as everything that preceded the Barbie Oppenheimer cataclysm that is nearly upon us, we're going to talk about some other best things of the year and possibly some things that let us down. I'm going to start with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. This is my favorite movie of the year so far. The first one I thought was totally inventive, you know, new spin on the character, lots of comedy, lots of imagination. Animation style was a little too much for me, especially as the movie like reached its climax. It just kind of overpowered me in the same way that Mitchell's versus the Machines did. And I think Across the Spider-Verse has toned it down to a certain extent while also really ramping up like an artistic quality to the animation. And it's combined with a more in-depth look at some of the characters, a more personal look at the characters. And it still has all of the inventive action, and it has all the imagination of the original. But it's just built on it so much more, and it is an incredibly cool movie. Every character in the movie has been, like, optimized to ooze a relaxation with themselves and with the world that they're in that just absolutely embodies whatever cool is, combined with the soundtrack, combined with the voice acting. I've seen it twice in theaters. I might go back and see it again. I've been listening to the sound. The music is generally not, you know, my taste, but I've listened to the soundtrack a lot. It's an A movie for me. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And thank you, Regal Crown Club, for frequent free visits to the theater so I can see this movie over and over again. JR, have you seen Across the Spider-Verse?
I did. I saw this opening night, and it's fucking great. So Spider-Man,
I can't believe it. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Neither could I. And I tell you what, I was pissed at the end of this movie because just tell me it's a two-parter before we go in.
You didn't know it was a two-parter?
No. Did you? Yeah. When did you see it?
Yes, I did.
When did you see it to know that? Like,
in the production schedule of it, I knew they were planning to release the next one pretty quickly. That doesn't seem likely based on some of the after the movie came out, there was some reporting on the intense like video game crunch style. We're gonna put in 20-hour days to make sure this movie is finished on time, and per these inside sources, they're saying there's just no chance it's going to be released when it is supposed to. Part three.
It was supposed to be like 10 months. It wasn't even going to be a full year. And the actors are talking about, they haven't even recorded a single line yet. You know?
Yeah. But, so whatever. However long it takes, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't know it was a two-parter. So I went in. The ending pissed me off, but like, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I thought, is a contender. I came out of that the first time I saw it. I'm like, this is a contender for best comic book movie of all time. And then Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I thought was even better. I guess I liked more that it was less of the, like, grown. It was more grown up, I guess. You know, we're dealing with, like, other issues besides figuring out who I am as Spider-Man. Now he's like, where do I fit in life now? You know, he's like, I'm Spider-Man, but I also am like a fucking 15-year-old or whatever. Like, my heart is out for this girl who's in a totally different dimension. How do I figure this out? And then, you know, she comes back. How does she go through life without him and all this stuff? And it's just way more grown up. And it was great. One of the things I really liked was like the one that trained him, Peter B. Parker. Everyone else is chasing this dude. And what was really cool is he's the only one that actually caught him with ease while holding a baby.
He doesn't show up until like the 100-minute mark.
Yeah.
There's so much else that's happening in this movie that it's not like biding its time until it gets to like the connected spider world where they all hang out together. It barely even needs to get there. There's enough in the characters themselves without like the broader plot. And the broader plot is just like a compliment to the characters, which is the opposite of a lot of these like big franchise movies that just seem to be on like rails, moving characters from one place to the next.
And
the story demands that because the overarching 10-year plan of this franchise demands that they get there.
Exactly.
It all feels very organic and purposeful and human. It's finding new ways into this specific story. Like, it really hits on the loneliness of being Spider-Man.
Yeah, this is technically a franchise, quote unquote. It's a three movies series as of right now.
Like, they'll do more.
Maybe they'll do more, but as of right now, we're like, we got three movies. They're not tying it in with anybody else's bullshit. So it's like, we're telling a story that's within this dude's universe. You know, he doesn't have to fucking meet Captain America at any point in this. He doesn't have to meet whatever. He's like, this is about Miles Morales being Spider-Man and the shit he's dealing with it. And it's great. Everything about it is great. They're all cool. And, you know, I'm really excited for the second one, for the third one, part two of this. I hadn't, and like I said earlier, I didn't know that it was a two-parter. So when it said to be continued, someone got up and walked out of the theater, and I was like, where the fuck are they going? I thought it was like a joke type of thing, you know, like it was going to be like to be continued. And then 2 seconds later, it was going to be like continuing. And then we finished the movie and then it went to credits. And I was like, holy shit, this is over? No way.
Where they leave Across the Spider-Verse, it didn't seem like there's enough for a whole nother movie. Like the team has been assembled to go rescue Miles. And the villain is where he's supposed to be by the end of Across the Spider-Verse. So it seems like there's like an hour, maybe. But whatever, I trust him. The ending, like where Miles ends up, is so rich. So many things can come out of that. The way they draw, we'll just go ahead and spoil it. The way they draw the other Miles, his eyes just look so dead. And I mean, it's animation. It's just incredible how they're able to get that out of, to get that specific look out of that character. It's really chilling, and it has really interesting ramifications if you're going to do like this multiverse kind of thing. Like if all these Peter Parkers are supposed to be superheroes, what if all these Miles Moraleses are supposed to turn into Prowlers?
Yeah.
And this one Miles Morales didn't. I think there's a perfect ending to this whole franchise, where what is supposed to happen does in fact happen, because so much of the second movie is about, you know, not being able to save everybody all the time, and Miles resisting that. And if by the end of this whole franchise he's come to terms with his powerlessness despite his mass power, I don't know. I feel like there's just a lot of really interesting places that the franchise could go.
Yeah.
That are outside of the usual superhero stuff.
Yeah, he could, and I'd be happy with either way, where he, like, they come together as a group and find a way to save it, like, as we're sitting here.
I don't want that to happen.
I don't either. No, I don't either. That's what I was going to say is, both of us, we are very pessimistic on shit. When we come and talk about movies, we're always generally like,
speaking, yes, that is true.
We're both like, I wish so-and-so would have died, like, two-thirds into this movie. I think it would have been a better movie, you know? So it's like, I think the better movie ends up being that his dad dies. But I can't say right now that it would be a bad movie if he doesn't say, if he saves him. Like this, it's very hard for me to criticize if he saves them as of right now, you know, there's a whole mother movie, but it's like looking at it, it's like, if they save him, they're going to find a way to make this work, because it's fucking, like, they've already made two stellar movies.
Yeah,
and they apparently know what they're doing. It's not like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which I think we've talked about, where I'm like, I wish Raccoon fucking whatever his name is, if he would have died, I think it ends up being a better movie. But they end up having the whole cheap bullshit where they, like, beat him together at the end, and it just didn't work the same. But I feel like Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, if they save him together, it, and they find a way for that to work. And so I don't want to say I want him to die, but I think it ends up being a better movie if he dies and this guy realizes he might have the power to just, like, murk the spot or something, and then has to realize, like, this is the great power comes great responsibility shit everyone's been talking about. Like, I have the ability to kill this guy right now, like, is what he realizes, and has to come back from that. And I think that's the better movie of the two options. But I can't say that they would fuck it up, because this shit is tight. Like, they've got it down pat.
Being able to see this other version of him that is a super villain, and wondering if he has that in him, and having to deal with, and having to, like, reckon with that, Like the trailer for Wonka came out today, and people, and like, I don't know, people on Twitter were giving it a lot of shit. But it's from Paul King, who directed Paddington and Paddington 2, so I trust him. I don't know that I'm going to see Wonka necessarily, but I trust Paul King, the guy who, you know, dreamed Knuckles McGinty into being, to have put some thought into what he's doing. And I trust the many people that make these Spider-Verse movies to do the same thing. But whenever the next movie comes out, 2025, I would be my guess, but almost certainly not next year.
I think it's coming out next year. It's just going to get pushed to like September.
Next year. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because originally it was like March or something like that, like something crazy. It's already pushed back to like June, and it's just going to get pushed back again. And I just don't think it's going to make it or whatever.
Yeah, but I would for them to rush it and put it out before it's done.
Yeah.
And but if the actors haven't recorded anything, then that might mean the script isn't finished and the writers are on strike, so they shouldn't be writing anything.
Yeah, that's true. Damn.
JR, what's your first thing?
Oh, yeah. My first thing is the other two. It ended up being the final season because of some harassment things. HR stuff, they were just like, we're going to end the show. But it was fantastic. The other two is about the two siblings that want to be famous that are siblings to a Justin Bieber-esque person. They're the main characters. And season three?
Mm-hmm.
Over the last two seasons, they started adding in more of the side characters. So Wanda Sykes is the kid's manager. And she gets more time, and then the mom gets more time, and the kid's other manager, Streeter, gets more time. And I think taking more off of the two siblings and spreading it out made the show a better show. But the last season, they both kind of make it, and it delivers hard. It delivers so well. So the brother in the other two, his name is Cary Dubeck. He lands a role as a blob, like a gelatinous blob in a Hotel Transylvania bullshit version of Hotel Transylvania run by Disney. And so they're literally saying Disney in this episode. And they're like, here's the thing. We want you to be this character because he's going to be gay. And he's like, oh, okay. How is he going to be gay? Like, this is peak TV right here. And it ties in with real life. They're like, how's he going to be gay? And they're like, well, because he's in there with another glob. He's in bed with another glob. And he's like, well, can you tell the glob is a guy? And they're like, no, it's a glob. So he's gay. If he wasn't gay, he'd be in bed with a human woman. And you're just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he has the same reaction. But then he's like, he's like so lost in wanting to be famous that he keeps fucking going with it. He goes on like the Tonight Show and like fucking the Today Show and like all these shows and does all these press tours and just loses himself in it. And it's fucking insane to just watch this. And you know that's how these companies are because
JR, have you seen Elemental?
That's what I was about to say. This was literally the week after. I have seen Elemental. The thing that got tweeted about Elemental was 6 days after this episode aired. So that's where it just gets even better is someone there. Apparently Elemental had a non-binary character.
Yeah. The sibling of the male lead.
Yeah.
Who has no lines. Is given like an androgynous name. Like it could go either. It can go either way. Doesn't necessarily imply maleness or femaleness. Is introduced as a sibling that doesn't talk at a dinner party.
And it was literally.
This is the first non-binary character ever had, and just like.
Yeah, the person that voiced it like tweeted out, almost a week to the day after. this episode aired, they were like, I feel like a big announcement. I got to play Pixar's first non-binary character, meet Lake. I voice Lake in the new movie Elemental. I'm seeing it in theater tonight with my friends, so you can catch it in theaters too if you want to see it. I'm not gonna say a week. Let's say within 2 weeks of this episode airing. So it was like seeing this crazy shit on fucking this show that you're like, this is insane. And then this exact thing happening within 2 weeks, it made the show even funnier. And then like, there's just so much stuff. The mom ends up being like a billionaire, Oprah level billionaire, and she can't go around without putting on makeup. And then like the whole season starts with the sister, Brooke Dubeck. She ends up losing her shit because she's not a good person. And during the pandemic, all these other people like became nurses to be good people. And she's just like, cannot like conceive of that in her mind. And so she's like running all these things to make, you know, to like make money for charity so she seems like a good person. There's just so much stuff here.
Yeah, it's not even that specific.
Yeah.
It's just like just a vague charity with no specific purpose or audience, just to be affiliate. I mean, yeah. It sucks that there's a lot of good commentary in the other two, but it's not going to stick because it's coming from these asshole showrunners who apparently were like abusive to the crew, or it's not like my understanding of the HR stuff against them. It wasn't like sex pestery kind of things. It was just like generally abusive behavior.
Yeah. Just piece of shit behavior. Stuff.
Yeah. Like the globby stuff. I'm about 4 episodes into the season and I haven't got to that stuff yet, but that sounds fairly brilliant. Disney's been doing this for a very long time. Since, I want to say, like, the Beauty and the Beast remake. Yes. I don't know who this is for. I don't know who's telling them to keep doing this stuff. They talk about how important it is for there to be representation, which, whatever, is, like, the right stuff to say if you're a giant conglomerate. And there are certainly people, cultural commentators and activists who like want that kind of thing and make a much better case than Disney themselves does. But then they hide them in these characters who you have to follow this metatextual commentary to like figure out what's actually happening, or they are easily edited out of a movie that's going to attempt to be shown overseas in places where you can't have any like gay material or LGBT material at all.
Yeah,
it's not that important. So shut the fuck up about it. I just can't stand the self-congratulatory nature of it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong.
You want to be loved and you want to make money, but that's what the money is for, to quote Mad Men.
I want to say this
fucking money and shut the fuck up.
Like, if you're going to fucking say we've got gay characters in this movie, have them actually like be characters in this movie. I don't want, what is it, Rise of Skywalker or Rogue One or whatever the fuck, where they're just like two people kissing in the background. Give me some shit. I want to see, like, make them actual characters. Like, give them love. Like, in that instance, Poe and Finn getting together. You know? Like, give me that.
I mean, the people who are pissed off about that kind of stuff, those assholes, they're going to be pissed off about it no matter what.
Exactly.
Like, when Lightyear came out last year, which, you know, wasn't a great movie, but the best part of it was this like whole life montage of one of Buzz Lightyear's his like colleague falling in love with a woman on this planet and having children with her and grandchildren, and they're just living in the same apartment. That's it. And people still got pissed off about that movie. So what are you trying to protect against? They're going to be upset no matter what. So congratulations. Lake, the character who doesn't speak, is in the movie and is non-binary.
that is a thing in this Globby episode. The Westboro Baptist Church kind of shows up in this Globby episode, and it's fucking good. They're like ready to boycott, and then they see the scene and they're like, that was it? That's the dude? And they go to, yeah, I mean, it's the episode. I mean, makes
that sounds pretty unrealistic.
It's so unrealistic. That part is unrealistic, but it's just like the overzealousness of these media companies to be like, oh my God. They were literally like, that's, you know, they're so overzealous to sell us this stuff that they were in this show, they were willing to be like, Disney's such bullshit with this. We want to make the Westboro Baptist Church look a little bit reasonable. Better than they are. Yeah. Like, that's how calling out on this Globby shit they were, because they were that they were like, yeah, even the Westboro Baptist Church is going to be like, that's not gay.
I was told there would be full penetration.
Yeah, yeah. That like the way this dude is doing his media tour, you'd think it was fucking a full unrated version of Brokeback Mountain, which there's some references later in the season to Brokeback Mountain that are very good.
I'll catch up with the other two in the next few weeks. So it was a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff to look forward to with that season. Yeah.
It was its best season, which is just so sad that it ended.
I'm not like crazy for it. I like it well enough. But yeah, it's a smart show. It's pretty funny. Episodes are too long, I think.
I could see that.
The 22 minute that format that was like pressed on Comedy Writers by networks. People just figured it out.
Yeah, you trim the fat with that too.
Yeah, they figured it out that's actually the right length for a episode of a comedy, and like 35 minutes is way too long. Way too long.
Yeah, I'm watching Suits right now, and every episode is like 45 minutes, and by the end of every episode, I'm like, Jesus Christ, you guys haven't fucking like closed this shit already? My God. It's been 40 minutes.
Well, it's a good thing there's only 250 more episodes or so of that.
I'm almost done. I've just been banging it out. I've just said, fuck it. I'm just going to crush through this show.
My next movie is, for my money, this is a 2023 release. Review sites didn't review it until 2023, even though it showed up on best of lists for 2022. But if your movie gets reviewed in February, it's a 2023 release. That's my rule. It often happens that movies that get related or get nominated for Best Foreign Language Oscar, as this one did, that those come out in the next calendar year in America. So this is as far as I'm concerned, this is a 2023 release. The movie I'm talking about is Close, directed by Lucas Daunt. This is a Belgian film. As I was watching this movie, let me back up. This movie is about two, we'll say 12 or 13-year-olds, approximately. They're going to a new school together, a new middle school in Belgium, more of a rural town. One kid, his family runs like a flower farm, and whatever that means in Belgium, rural. It's a tiny place. Point being, they're best friends. They're very affectionate with each other. They hang on each other. They sleep in the same bed during sleepovers. There's no intimation that they're gay 12-year-olds. They're just friends who are very close and very affectionate. They go to this new school with kids they never met before, and they're not dicks. Kids aren't dicks. Like a group of girls asked if they are together. And they're not together. They're just really good friends. But for reasons that neither of them can articulate, this question makes them split apart a little bit. And that's kind of the whole movie. So it hits a lot of marks for me. It's a sad movie about adolescence. It's a sad French region movie that's about sad kids that are sad. It lingered with me in a way that few movies do. It is incredibly powerful. As I was watching this movie, I was reminded of an article I read on a site, I don't remember where, it might have been like Slate or Slate Adjacent, something like that, about a book that this sociologist, Niobe Way, wrote. I can't remember what that's called either. I don't know. But she did like a multi-year study with a bunch of adolescent kids, or adolescent boys, and she caught up with them when they were about this age, and she asked them to talk about their friendships, talk about their friends, talk about their circles of friends, and she paid close attention to what kind of words they used, and they used a lot of affectionate language, they used a lot of intimate language, they used a lot of like intense emotional language. And by the time she caught up with them when they were like 17 or 18, they were all already lamenting the death of their social lives in a way that grown men talk about when they talk about how hard it is to make friends as an adult.
Jesus fucking Christ.
They've lost all the intimacy in their lives. Their friends were no longer able to describe the people that they were so close to when they were 12 or 13 as, or in the same intense language that they were using in that period. The sociologist put this phenomenon on like gay panic and masculinity and the need to defend yourself at all costs against any kind of anti-masculine language and needing to assert your masculinity at all times. But what was lost, they knew that it was happening, but they couldn't stop it. They had no language to stop it, and they hated it while it was happening. And that's the exact same thing that's happening in this movie. And the director has cited this book in his reason for making the movie. It's shot like a Terrence Malick movie to really just rub your face in the dirt even more. Like, people should be happy in this beautiful place. And it tears your goddamn heart out to see these two boys not be happy anymore over the course of the movie. Not a perfect movie. There's several scenes towards the end that like heal a different relationship that it wasn't clear needed healing, really. It wasn't the most important thing in the movie. It kind of is like fumbling around for an ending. But in the lead up to it is just devastating in the best possible way that you would want from a movie. Had you heard of this, JR? Again, it was.
I had not.
Last year.
No. I normally do, like, I try my best. I usually watch like 70 of the 75 movies that are nominated for any category of Academy Award. I did not even come fucking close. I probably watched like 10 of these shits last year, and 9 of them I probably just randomly saw in theater anyway. I did not even go out of my way to try to watch any of them, and I'm kind of sad because this seems right up my alley. I love a good coming of age film, and a lot of coming of age films are sad as fuck. And so,
especially from this part of the world,
yeah. They just,
for whatever reason, French, Belgium, Dutch, whatever, German, even, they just have a better sense of what it is to, like, this is the part of the world where this kind of movie was invented.
400 Blows. Yeah.
Yes. And they've kept that talent. They kept that skill sharp in the decades since that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to watch this. This immediately is getting put. It's got put on my list movies to watch.
What's your next thing, JR?
Yeah, my next thing is The Last of Us. Show about post-apocalypse, where the apocalypse has happened because of a virus that is like spreading and turning people into zombie type things.
Excuse me. A fungus.
You're right. A fungus. Specifically. Not a virus. You're right. A fungus that has turned people into zombies. Great. hard to say great show. This was a good show. It had an episode that was, in my opinion, objectively great in it with Nick Offerman. And apparently that episode is just like a cut scene in the game, which I've never played.
Neither have I.
They just turned this cut scene into a fucking like a whole episode, and it's great. But just in general, it's about this girl who cannot be infected, and she needs to be basically smuggled to a resistance camp outside of Boston, and then they're going to find a way to turn her shit into a vaccine. In any way, they can't just go outside of Boston, so they have to like go all the way to like fucking Colorado or some shit. So it takes months, and this is like every episode skips forward a couple days or a week, and then there's like a 2-month skip or some shit. But it's good. You're following the dynamic of a supposed 16-year-old and you know, a 40-year-old man, or however old he's supposed to be in the show, 50-year-old man, and it works. The dynamic works, how they play off of each other works, and, you know, just following everything, and, you know, you meet his brother at times at one point in the show, and it's good. It's not great, but it is a good show that is worth a watch. It's dark, lots of death, but it's also very lighthearted. Lots of laughing in seasons, but then, you know, or in episodes, but then you. It's also beautifully shot.
Is it actually funny, or are the characters laughing?
Both.
Okay.
There are things, and, you know, I don't know. I might be like a terrible person, so I can't. Maybe you're not supposed to laugh.
You're surrounded by vicious mushroom people, you know. People will eventually start to make jokes about them.
Yeah.
It's either that or blow your brains out.
Yeah, and you start really liking characters, and then they get offed.
Sure.
Because it's a fucking zombie show, right? And so they're like, oh, let's introduce these guys to you. You're gonna fucking love them, and they start pulling at your heartstrings, and then, bang, they're gone by the end of the episode, and you're just back with these two people traveling, and it's some of them are rough, but it's a good show. I don't really have a lot to say about it because it's what you think of in a show about roaming the West. With, you know, roaming the earth with zombies around, but it's done well. You know, they meet marauders, they end up in like Atlanta at one point or some shit like that, you know. And so they're like trying to get out of it. They get in Atlanta, then they're trying to get out of Atlanta, and it's all the tropes of these zombie movies, but just done really well.
Like why is it better, if it is, than like The Walking Dead?
The Walking Dead is fucking bullshit. I watched 2 seasons of that show, and then I was like, I'm done. The Walking Dead was just like, it's very much like shitty TV show. Like, you can tell it's not good. Like, it's hard to say it like that. It's a different vibe. The Walking Dead is a sitcom version of this, in my opinion, maybe the way to say it. Not sitcom, but like...
It felt like they stayed in Georgia pretty much the entire time.
Yeah, it's like... sitcom is not the way to say it, but it was like... This show felt... Everything about The Last of Us felt more imminent. And, like, important. Everything they were doing was, like, the pressure was on, right? So it's like, even when they're in a room with the zombies, one, it's an HBO show, so they're spending, like, $1 million an episode. So you know the fucking the CGI is better. They're doing partial real shit in there too. And then you've also got it's just the writing is better and it's lit. The cinematography is better. So, for instance, there was an episode where they were in a room trying to travel across whatever, and they have to go through this room, and a fucking thing starts attacking them, right? And everything that is happening is shot off of like two flashlights. So you're feeling like semi Sam Raimi type shit, where it's like they're just like turning and fucking like a little flashlight is like flashing across the room, and you see this thing running after another person, and then they're trying to like help that person while also not being attacked themselves, versus like everything that happened in The Walking Dead, it was like they were just out in daylight and they're just like pumping shotguns and like you know, it just seemed lazier. They were just like, okay, we're gonna have 1,000 of these zombies walking at you, and you guys are just gonna try to mow them down from inside this building, and you're shooting outside this building or whatever. And this was, they just cared more about like making it feel more truly intense for a lot of it. And, you know, in my opinion, you care about the people more right off the bat, but that's all, that also has to do with just the better writing. What, The Walking Dead is a fucking Bravo show or something? Like
AMC.
Yeah. AMC. They're not, you're not getting your best there. Yeah. And like you said, they're, for a lot of the time, they're not leaving in The Walking Dead. They spend tons of time on compounds, and that's the whole thing of this show, is they're like, they might spend the night and then they're like, we got to wake up and leave.
They're moving. They have an objective. They have a plan.
Yeah.
I gave up on The Walking Dead pretty early too. It just didn't seem like there was never a plan beyond find a safe place and survive there until it's not safe anymore, and then you find a new safe place. It just got boring as shit after a while.
Yeah.
My next thing is You Hurt My Feelings. This is a movie by Nicole Holofcener, an indie director who goes back and forth between film and TV. Probably her best known movie is Enough Said, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini in one of his final performances. That was one of my favorite movies from that year it came out, which was 2013. And this is one of my favorite movies from this year. You Hurt My Feelings also stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who is not just a fantastic comedic actor. She can really bring it when asked. On the rare occasion that she's asked, she doesn't do a lot of these kind of roles. This is her second go-around with Holofcener. And this movie is basically about nothing. The stakes are incredibly low. She plays a writer who is trying to get a new book published, and her husband is a therapist, and she overhears her husband speaking to her brother-in-law that he didn't like her book, even though he's been saying over and over again, oh, it's good, you really cracked this one, so perceptive, etc., etc. And this just throws her whole world into disarray. Like, how do I know that I'm any good? How do I know that my husband is trustworthy anymore? What does it mean that he didn't think I was confident enough to hear his criticism? And every character in the movie, and there aren't that many, there's like five characters in the movie, her kid, her sister, her brother-in-law, they're all at this point in their lives, like late 40s, early 50s, where their careers are not going to necessarily progress anymore. Like I said, he's a therapist. He's not a particularly good therapist. His patients are kind of rebelling against him. He's falling asleep, or he looks like he's falling asleep in sessions. Her sister, played by Michaela Watkins, another Nicole Holofcener mainstay, is like a decorator for rich people who she hates, and she thinks their tastes are bad, and she hates her job. And I can't remember and the brother-in-law, played by the actor who played Stewie in Succession, He's an actor who is an okay actor. All these people are they're fine. They're average. These are average people coming to terms with their averageness. Finally, over the course of their lives, there's a really good scene in about the middle of the movie when all this is like, when all these conflicts are like coming to a head, and their son, who was like 23 or so, he's just graduated from college and he's working at like a weed shop as opposed to like doing something related to his degree. And he like flips out on his parents for telling him how great he was his whole life. And he's realizing that, no, in fact, I'm a deeply average person with deeply average qualities. And because you've told me this my whole life, I can't trust my own judgment anymore. Or your judgment, either. I don't know what's real. And it's again, the stakes are these comfortable white people. But what they're talking about, like, transcends their position in life. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Yourself, your picture of yourself and whether or not it gets challenged, and how you would grapple with that shit. Like, if someone came in here and was like, "Boy, John, your reviews sure do suck. You're really paper thin here. You're really not getting into the meat of any of what these movies are about." Or, "Boy, John, your taste in, I'm looking at my Blu-ray shelf right now, your taste in movies sure is exactly what I would think it would be for a white guy who's almost 40. That would be wrong, first and foremost. The person who said that wouldn't know what the fuck they were talking about. But if they did, yeah, I would stop and think about, is that possible? It might shake my confidence. And it's a very internal movie that is extremely well acted and extremely naturalistic. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her skill set is just mind-boggling, that she can have had these just role after role after role on TV that are different and so great in their own way. And then she jumps into movies and is able to turn in these incredible performances that are funny and really affecting and really sympathetic. She's got a way that she like cracks that is just not something you expect from. She can't help but be like Elaine from Seinfeld and Selena from Veep. You've just spent too much time with her to really think of her as anything other than that. And to see Elaine like crack in the way that she does in this movie and in Enough Said, it blurs those lines and breaks those lines in such an incredible way. She should continue to work with Nicole Hollis Center and get her movies made as much as she can. I don't know how much you hurt my feelings is. I mean, it's not raking in the box office by any means, but I mean, it wouldn't have been that expensive a movie in the first place. It's great. Just, you know, go in understanding that these people aren't going to, like, you know, save an old couple from a burning building. Like, their problems are small, but that's okay. Heard of this movie? Seen this movie, JR?
Nope, but it sounds good. I'm, as a huge fan of Veep and a huge fan of Seinfeld, I will watch anything with Julie Louis-Dreyfus in it, which, like, has burned me because I watched that fucking one movie with the fucking Kenya Barris movie, which was
the what?
The Kenya Barris movie, the dude that made Mixed Dish.
Oh, You People?
You People, which is just like a very shitty ripoff of every other movie that's ripped off Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. It was the
that
worst
guy,
version.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Kenya Barris, he's a fraud.
Yes.
I don't think he's figured out how to do anything after making all that Blackish money. I think his perspective has been destroyed.
Yeah, so the problem was, is like the dude, like, objectively made some good shit. Like, Blackish started out very good. And he was a writer for, like, Girlfriends and the move and Soul Food and the Game, which are like That's like a whole thing in itself. But then, like, then he left that. He made fucking Girls Trip, which was objectively good.
Did he?
Yeah. I think he wrote that.
I would buy that. I believe that.
But then it's just been, it's been downhill for this man. I mean, he fucking wrote White Men Can't Jump. I don't even, like, why would you even think about doing that?
I mean, it seems like he just likes to write about himself. And his life is, you know, like 0.001% these days, which is only so interesting. Yeah, I didn't watch, he was in one of these shows at a certain point. Black AF.
Black AF, black as fuck, yeah, on Netflix.
Just like, I don't know. You're still rich, man.
Yeah, he's lost the plot.
Sure. What's your next thing, JR?
My last one for me is Ted Lasso. I think at this point everybody has heard of Ted Lasso. The final season just aired, and it is their final stretch before. Are you going to watch this? Have you seen this?
I have not seen this yet. Theoretically, I will watch this at some point. I mean, I loved the first season just like everybody else did. I thought the second season was okay. Not bad by any means. I still got a lot of fun out of it. Probably too long, again. But I have not felt any urgency at all. So, nothing's really trickled through either as far as what happens. Or even what the plot is.
So the thing with Ted Lasso is everyone has lost their fucking mind, right? So Ted Lasso season one was good. It was great, in my opinion. And because it was so good, everyone like is just forgetting that we're watching a fucking sitcom. Like, this is not, like, Ted Lasso is at its core a cheesy ass sitcom. And so when the second season came around and it what people weren't getting like Game of Thrones type shit out of it, you know, like not Game of Thrones, but like HBO type shit out of it, they were like, this fucking sucks. And the same thing with season three. And I think if you watch it as a cheesy ass sitcom that it is, it's good. I think Ted Lasso season three was good, which a lot of people don't agree with me, but I think they're watching it in the wrong lens. Like, and I still watch a lot of sitcoms, right? So I still watch a lot of sitcoms because I'm all about that easy watching a lot of time. And so Ted Lasso as a sitcom is a good show. Like, there's fucking the people like sing the soccer players like sing a musical to fucking a little musical number to send off Ted Lasso at the end of the season. Like, they routinely are saying like Jean Valjean and shit. Like, it's over the top, but it's fun. And I think that's what a lot of people are missing in watching the show is like, this was a high, low, high is what it felt like to me. Like, season one was like, it hit a lot of highs and you felt good. But then season two was like the solid, like, this dude's in therapy, shit's not going well for him. And then season three is he's like coming back and being himself. And I think they also incorporate, you get more of other characters. So like Coach Beard is, you find out more about Coach Beard and Jamie and the dude that's mad all the time. I can't think of his name. Is they start having a bond and a friendship, and Keeley is like bonding and gets a girlfriend and all this stuff. And it's all just like, it's fun. Everything you're watching is fun. You're watching Friends become friends. You're watching little dumb things happen, like I said, where they're like Jean Valjean, there's like a whole racism subplot because one guy calls out some shit. Like, this is it's a sitcom. Like, it what do people want? And I think like I've said before, as a sitcom, it hits what you want as a sitcom. And I think what everyone's missing is that it is a sitcom. It is not some shit that's got like, it's got tons and tons to say about the world and whatever. you know, it's got things to say about the world, but they're all wrapped up pretty neatly, just like all the rest of the sitcoms are. You know, I'm currently watching a reboot of The Wonder Years, where it's all black people in the 60s. And, you know, every episode in The Wonder Years is like, there's a whole episode where Titus Burgess is in this episode, and he's a drag queen. And so he's always dressed as a woman. And, you know, the whole, all the fun shit happened.
What neighborhood is
New York. Wonder
Years reboot taking place in?
Alabama, but the dad goes to New York to write music for Marvin Gaye. So they're in New York. So this is like new to them, right? So he comes from Alabama and they see Titus Burgess dressed as a woman in the 60s/70s and they're like, what the fuck? But then at the end, you know, they're like, oh my God, you're from Alabama too. You probably grew up right around, you know, where I did or whatever. And then they're, you know, it's like, we're all not so different. Like that's the, you know, the grand scheme of the episode. And it's like, that's how you have to watch Ted Lasso. Is like a lot of Ted Lasso is like the grand scheme of the episode is like these dudes fucking hated each other, but now they found this like this bond of just loving soccer in this episode, and now they're friends or racism's not bad. And it's when you watch it with that lens that you, I think, can appreciate the show more, is it's a fucking sitcom. And I think everyone should watch it. And if you can watch it with that lens, you'll appreciate it more. But it's very good. And I really enjoyed it. It was funny. You know, like I saw while we were watching it, I saw tweets where people were like, this is ridiculous. Why would they ever do that? Like there's a whole thing where they have a chat. The soccer players have a talk about like, okay, a girl's sending you nudes. You break up. Should you delete them? Are they yours now? Because technically it is your property once I send it to you, but they're like, yeah, but is it like, should we do that? It's still kind of skeezy, yada, yada. And everyone's tweeting like, nobody's having that conversation. Like nobody's having that real conversation in a locker room. And you're like, yeah, but this isn't like a real show. You know what I mean? Like the show is literally about
it. Should it be?
What? They should be.
You're kind of losing me. Like the first season, I think what everybody liked the first season was that it did have a plot.
No, like, it has a plot.
But what was the plot of the second season? Like looking back, like over the course of it, like Nate is getting frustrated with his job. Yeah, Ted goes into therapy briefly. It became more of a hangout show in the second season after what I thought was a really well-written first season, not just like character-wise, but plot-wise, where the engine of the plot is built into the character of Ted, like him winning over all of these skeptics and disrupting their plans to ruin the team. That all added up into like a complete package. Whereas the second season, it was a lot more free flowing, and after a single season that could only be described as a failure, as they got relegated. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves each other. There's not as much conflict, if any conflict, except for Nate, except for like the, you know, like the second assistant coach. So not the end of the world. And then now by the third season, it just seems like that's all continuing. Like a show needs conflict.
The conflict is he still doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Right. He's still,
but it's been 3 years at this point now.
Yeah. They are no longer relegated. And a lot of the conflict is they started winning, but now they are no longer winning. So they like in the first episode, they like have won like 5 straight games, but then they've gone on like a 10 game losing streak. And everyone
does anybody ever leave the team?
One character that they introduce,
like, is added to the team or leaves the team?
He gets added to the team and then he gets removed. He leaves the team.
But like the core.
No, group. The core people stay there.
of like 15 or so recognizable players.
That's what I'm saying. This is a fucking sitcom. Like, how many sitcoms are where people fucking, like, the sitcoms, these motherfuckers are staying on these sitcoms for 20 seasons. You know what I mean?
That's all well and good, but that was never going to happen with this show. Like, it seemed like if they wanted it to run forever, it would have run forever. But the fact that of it ending after three seasons means, or tells me that was kind of always the plan.
Yes.
So I don't feel like if it wanted to be more interested in like in the mechanics, like what it means to run an English Premier League team, they could have done that.
I don't think it was interested in that. I think it was interested in being a, and I agree with you, it could have done that. I think the overall thing for this was just they wanted to make a fun sitcom. That's how I feel about the entire show. Yes, season one is the best, and I cannot argue that. I will argue that it is the best, but I think the overall plan, and I think it shows, is they were just like, we want to make a fun sitcom that has some things to say about stuff. Yeah, get your mentals right. You know, we're going to take stances on some things and yada, yada, yada. But we're not here to fucking, we're not making The Sopranos here. We're not making The Wire, you know. They're like, we want to make a fun show where everyone is enjoying their time on the show and people are enjoying watching the show, I think is what they wanted. And I think they've done that. And I think that's what people are missing, is because season one was so good, they don't think of it. And I think you, for instance, are one of those people. I think you're like, yeah, season one was great. They did all this stuff. I think that's incidental.
You gave me a show at a sitcom length that was plot driven, that had the rhythms of a sitcom. And then as the show continued, you took away the plot driven part.
It's just a sitcom.
Yeah.
That's a fair criticism to have of the show, but I think once you get out of that, like, it needs to have more plot, you're just like, you're watching a show that you realize is like, it's either like a sad episode or just a fun episode, or, you know, or whatever. And instead of being like, what's the overarching plot of this season, you're just like, what are we in for today? You know, when I watch The Goldbergs, that's all I'm doing is I'm like throwing on The Goldbergs before I go to sleep. I'm like, what ridiculous shit's going to happen on this episode of this show? And I think that if you watch it like that, it is a better show.
I guess like the Emmys don't help in that regard. A show should be a little more like it. I mean, they did win comedy Emmys, granted, but like a show should be more serious if it's going to win Emmys. It would be weird for the Emmy nominations to come out and like Ted Lasso gets a bunch next to Barry and The Bear. And there's other shows like this, like some other show that happens to be a half an hour long.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it should win Emmys. I have not seen Barry. I have not seen The Bear.
Barry transitioned from a show that was funny to a show that became funny in the way that Sopranos is funny.
Yeah, like I'm totally ready to watch it. It's just my girlfriend at the time and I had not. We were like, let's wait till it comes out. And then we were like watching other stuff too. And so it was like just a whole thing where I hadn't got to it. But yeah, like I'm totally ready to watch Barry, but I know it's not the same level of shit, right? This is sitcom comedy, not at the same level as season one comedy.
This Ted Lasso might be like the peak of, and when I say peak, I mean like as high as a thing gets in like its cultural swing before it inevitably declines, of Nice Core, where like Paddington 2 being like the supreme example, and then Ted Lasso shortly on its coattails And now maybe I'm tired of this kind of thing. Like maybe I've got enough of radical kindness in my movies and TV shows. I had like 4 or 5 things a year, and now I'm tired of it. I mean, like Marcel the Shell kind of falls into this same category, although that was a little bit more melancholy than something like Paddington is capable of.
Yeah. It was Wayman. That's Wayman. Wayman's idea is radical kindness.
Wayman.
Best actor, best supporting actor.
Oh, yeah.
Kwan.
Yeah. That's right.
Just be nice, as he said in the show. Which is, that's my best movie of 2022, as you know.
I came down on that movie as the year went on.
I hate you.
What a classic response from an Everything Everywhere All at Once fan. You think this movie is the greatest thing in the world, therefore you're a bad person.
You're a terrible human.
You couldn't have done that exactly. You couldn't have done that any better, JR.
Listen, I think, and there's probably receipts on this, I came out of that movie and I was like, it's winning best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, best movie, and best director. I have receipts on saying that. And when I came out, my girlfriend at the time had some friends that I knew, and I saw them there, and they were like, not as high on the movie as I was. They didn't say it was bad. They just weren't as high on the movie as I was. I was sitting on this movie so high that I texted her and I was like, hey, yo, your friends suck. I was like, I'm out on these people.
It's definitely coming from like a Ted Lasso place where like you can talk someone out of depression or suicidal impulses or just being a dick in the case of Ted Lasso. And like, I don't know, maybe it's deeper than just, you're never going to be able to find the right sequence of words. Like life doesn't work like that.
Yeah. And to be fair, Ted goes to therapy and shit. But yeah, the other characters are just like,
yeah, everybody's great.
They just needed people around them. That's their whole thing in the show.
Yeah.
They needed the right people around them, talking to them the right way, which I've seen that before. Like, I can't say that it happened with 20 separate people at once, but I have seen that thing happen with a person where it's like, hey, you're just surrounded by the wrong motherfuckers. And so once you get that together, your life is going to be better.
Anything else? Anything else for best of 2023 so far, JR?
No, I really haven't seen a lot of shit that's come out in 2023. I already said this. I want to say it again. Avatar: The Way of Water was boring.
Yeah, I gave it a C. I wrote a lot about it on the website. Check it out, MutinyMovie.club. Franchise work. I don't like franchise work. I don't like... Tell the story. Tell me who this kid is that is, for some who knows reason, is voiced by Sigourney Weaver and motion captured by Sigourney Weaver pretending to be like a 15-year-old girl. Who the fuck is she? Who's her mom? Why can she talk to sea anemones? I don't have any patience for franchise work. And I agree with you.
Yeah, I like John Wick 4 more than you did. Obviously, we've talked about this.
I was with it until the end. Like the last hour that everybody was so high on, I was exhausted by it. Like it turned into a video game, which is what I was afraid of the whole time.
The Super Mario Brothers movie?
Fine. It was fine.
That was like exactly what I wanted it to be, which was like just ridiculous nonsenseness, which is what I wanted. So I'm not mad about that. There were a
couple times when the movie became a Mario level, which was exactly the right thing to do. Like incorporate the platform.
Rainbow Road and
yes, but not so much that, but just like the movie, it like became 2D, and there were like a handful of like Three Stooges bits that I liked, like the plum, like before they even go into the magic world, like the plumbing stuff. Needle drops, bad, I thought. Way too much. Who's buying the Super Mario Brothers movie soundtrack? Like, why spend the money on these music rights when the property that you bought has some of, like, the most iconic musical stings of the last, like, 40 years?
Yeah, Creed 3 was good, too.
Sure, it's in our latest trio. We'll talk about that next week or so.
Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I thought was
good. Yeah, fine. I've seen about 40 movies so far this year, maybe a little more. As far as like the first 6 months of any given year, fairly solid. I've got 6 A minuses and 1 A, so that's fine. And there's a lot of stuff to look forward to. There's a new Silent the Most movie coming out, new Scorsese, new Fincher, new Ridley Scott, all people that are capable of churning out like A-plus work and have in the past. So, yeah, bring it on.
I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see how bad actually Napoleon is going to be. I don't think it's going to be good.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. I just got a feeling.
My gut. Ridley Scott is, Ridley Scott is great. I love Ridley Scott. The man is making huge movies well into his 80s. The Last Duel was fantastic. One of the best movies of its year. Very few people saw it. But a return to form for him as far as like historical epics with a completely like new twist on the script that he's like never, that I've barely seen anybody incorporate into their movies, much less Ridley Scott, who's got like a huge track record. I just trust him to work with this kind of material.
Oh yeah, I'm just being a hater right now.
It's gonna be epic. Joaquin Phoenix doesn't fuck around. He's not gonna phone it in. I think it'll be great.
What was the other movie you said? There's another. Killers of the Flower Moon. That book is like, I haven't read the book.
Either way.
That book has got like crazy reviews.
New Fincher, he's returning to like a serial killer. Well, that'll be fun, I'm sure. Dune 2.
What movie is that? The new David Fincher movie.
The Killer, starring Michael Fassbender. So hopefully, Michael Fassbender has kind of been in the wilderness for several years. This, as has Fincher, kind of. It depends. I don't know. Like, I'm not a big Mank fan. I thought Mank was fine. But yeah, Fincher, he's made 2 movies in the last 10 years. If you don't count Mindhunter, which why would you? So yeah, it'll be nice to get something back from him. And then Dune 2 is coming out. That looks great. There should be good stuff before presumably things crater next year with various strikes and delays and all kinds of fun stuff.
As long as we don't get another fucking Donald Trump out of this, you know, which can be directly tied to the last writer's strike, then
like the increased primacy of reality TV and all that. Sure, it'll be a robot Donald Trump this time. It'll be the AI version of him. That's what'll come out of this. That'll do us for this episode of the Munich Movie Club podcast. Check us out on the internet at munichmovie.club. Our normal format, of course, is to review 3 movies, write reviews of those movies, and then talk about those movies on our podcast. In keeping with the theme of today, best of 2023 so far, we did the same thing for our last 3 movies. We watched Magic Mike's Last Dance, which is not amongst the best of 2023, P.S. We will also watch Creed 3 and Reality, the HBO, the Max movie about Reality Winner, based on the transcript of the day that FBI agents came knocking upon her door. I've also posted several reviews of some 2023 movies on the website, Women Talking and White Noise. Both movies I was not a huge fan of. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club, and follow us on Twitter at Munich Movie Call, and Instagram at Munich Movie Club. Thank you for joining me tonight, JR.
No problem.
Have a good night.
You too.